as we get started, I just want to respond to a friend of the show, James Robinson, left a question on Spotify in response to Vocast episode 59, questioning our thoughts on the enforced side-by-side rule when overtaking. I think we're going to touch on that a little bit together. It's just me and Sim today. However, I want to really kind of save that question for when we've got a bigger group to get more kind of responses to the question. So we'll hold that, James, and we'll focus on that a bit deeper when I say it's a bigger group recording.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I do have a thought on that and a proposal on that, which I'm going to say on this podcast, because on our podcast about V10s, I made a suggestion on how to improve racing, which Matt rightly cut out because I made it right at the end, only to find out a week later the FIA had the exact same thought. So I'm not sitting on my thought much longer in case they steal it again. For those of you that don't know, my thought was basically that we should remove pit lane speed limits. And that was a semi-serious suggestion. And I was actually going to, you know, suggest we look at the pit lane speed limit and whether increasing that would encourage people to do more pit stops, because faster through the pit lane, you lose less time during the pit stops. And then it turned out the FIA are actually investigating doing this at the tracks where it is a 60 mile an hour speed or 60 kilometers an hour speed limit versus 80 kilometers and raising it. So yes, so FIA, you can have that one for free.
It does intrigue me that, because I think for my level of understanding, I kind of need more explaining onto how that affects things, because to me, it doesn't matter what the speed limit is because it's the same for everyone. So everyone kind of, nobody's going to gain anything different to my mind if they're going faster or slower through the pit lane.
Yeah, the problem isn't that. It's not the gain versus other people. It's the gain versus not stopping. So obviously we see the drivers drive around to a delta, not taking everything out of the tyres, because it's better to lose a tenth a lap for 25 laps than it is to have to do an extra pit stop at 20 seconds. And so obviously if you try and adjust that time so you lose less time when you're in the pit lane, it's more likely to do it. It's why we always see the teams pit under virtual safety car or safety car, because they lose less time. Overall, in the start to finish, all the simulations are what's the fastest way to get from green lights to checkered flag. Yeah, tyre degradation, pit lane, delta, all come into that. So if you can reduce the pit lane delta, they're more likely to make more stops.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the virtual safety car reference there actually kind of helped.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, often you hear, actually, it was a factor at Imola, they want to try and get to 23 seconds and then make a pit stop if they can do it. So then, by reducing that kind of, they don't need to stretch it as far, as that kind of encourages it a bit more to kind of quicken the pace up. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Cogs are going there.
Yeah. And it did make me chuckle though, because obviously they announced this before Imola, before Miami. And then, do you remember what happened in the sprint race, Matt?
Lewis got a podium.
He did. That's not what I was thinking. The Max and Kimi incident in the pit lane.
Oh, yes. How could I forget? Oh, man, it's been so long we're recording. Everything's merged into one that I tried to say, but yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, unsafe release on Max Verstappen. Clearly an unsafe release. I think Kimi did really well not to crash into anybody or any of his team mechanics who were in the pit lane. But yeah, just imagine if that was just 20 kilometres an hour faster, that could have been a completely different result. So yeah, it's one of those things where, yeah, F1 seems safer these days, but it's still not 100% safe. So yeah, we do need to be careful, I think.
Yeah, I think it's funny. It was something that came to mind as soon as you start discussing pit lane speed limits. Is that really, are we that far down the barrel of looking for competition that that's what we're going to stretch? Because like you say, it's so easy to become complacent with safety standards, and we see so many crashes now. Again, Yuki Tsunoda at Imola in qualifying, where probably not too long ago, a driver wouldn't have been walking away from that like he did. And so it is easy to think, oh yeah, it's so safe now. But like you say, a small increase in speed in that Kimi and Max collision could have such different consequences in such a tight area with a lot of people in it that, yeah, that really needs to be a serious consideration.
Indeed. On to the Miami race then. Won comfortably by Oscar Piastri and Lando, with George in his customary third. And Max down in fourth. But I think the talking point from that race touches on James's question a little bit at the start of the race. So Max held on versus Lando round turn one. But then into turn two, Max, I don't think shoved Lando off the circuit is the right word. But I would definitely say he showed him off the racing surface.
Yeah, it's another one of them, isn't it, where because you've got the tarmac runoff and things like that, you kind of, when you put to a driver, you either use that runoff or we're having an accident. And it's just classic kind of Max tactics there. Again, you like to talk about if there was a wall instead of a runoff, if there was grass, would it have been different? With Max, I don't think it would have been, to be honest, but it's still that kind of, just everything that involves Max kind of comes down to this frustratingly again.
Yeah, and I think it comes back to James's question of codifying racing. Personally, I don't think some racing is something you can write down in a PDF and say, this is the rules. There's way too many variables to do that. So would you like to hear my idea, Matt?
Always. I love hearing your ideas.
Okay. So we govern racing incidents based off vibes. So you look at it and it's all about, did that feel right? Did that look right? And to avoid any suggestion of bias, I propose there's a room that you've got your racing stewards in. They don't watch the race. They are shown the incidents when they arise, but the cars have been digitally altered, so they're just completely white. So they've got no idea who the drivers involved are. They're just seeing two white cars doing exactly what happened on track, and they make a decision based off vibes.
I love it. I do. I love that. Because really, that's what fundamentally comes down to it is like kind of, there's so many times you can look at something, particularly kind of this kind of situation where you've got this rule set that's sort of half secret that we're not supposed to really know or understand which.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then, you know, and the line, is he entitled to the corner? That's one of the worst things to ever come into motorsport for me. I hate it. I say motorsport, it's F1. Let's not talk everything else with that. And it's like, it's such a ridiculous argument. Like, entitled, what does that even mean? Like, kind of, is there a car there? Yes. Well, can your car go there? No. Like, it's simple as that. And I mean, I'm not going to try and profess to be an F1 racer, but me and you, very experienced in iRacing, for example. And we know that if there's a car there, we're not going to go there. We might try and give it a bit of a squeeze, kind of, you know, your racing competition, but it's not hard. It's not complicated. And if you're moving over and that car has to move over to avoid an accident, then you're wrong. So when you kind of pull away this code of conduct, for what you want to call it, and like you say, you completely remove the identity of the cars and the drivers, and people are looking at it completely independently and unaware of the race context, you really can, like you say, it does say ridiculous to go off vibes, but you can go off the vibe of the incident. You can look at the incident in isolation and say, this is what's happened. You can see that driver has done that. You can see that driver's moved over. That driver's held that position. You know, if a car wants to sit around the outside, I don't care if that front wing is level with the rear wing, ahead of the front wing, whatever. It's there. Like, kind of, you want to go around the outside, you're there. And, you know, you can't just cut someone off because the rules say so. Like, it's ridiculous. So, no, I do really agree with that.
Yeah, I think Charles Leclerc said it after him, and there was an incident with him and Albon. And, you know, it comes down to where Albon's front wheel is in relation to Charles's mirror. And Charles was like, how am I meant to know this at 200 miles an hour? the exact millimetres or inches, and whether it's my corner or not, you know. And that's what made me think, you know, you can look at an incident and you know whether it felt right or not, whether it looked right or not. I'm not going to claim I'm completely unbiased, because there are times when I do look at it and, you know, who the driver is does colour that opinion. So I think if there's a way to take that out completely, that's what we need to do. But I just think that would be a way better solution than trying to actually notarise the rules of racing.
I think actually Leclerc's a good point there, because I thought, to be honest, again, I still think my brain works in a more of a general racing kind of method than an F1 method. I thought Leclerc looked wrong in that and what he did with Albon, but that's a symptom of this F1 kind of rules of overtaking, rules of engagement. I think if F1 hadn't been this messy, Charles Leclerc wouldn't have done that. He only did that because he thought, well, this is the rules of our racing. like kind of, it's so ridiculous. Like, like you look at Albon's on board and you just see Charles Leclerc coming over and you're like, no, just don't do that. Like, it's simple as.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah,
like you say, Charles Leclerc's trying to gauge where Albon's front wing is whilst navigating a corner, and then everyone got a triple-digit speed. Then, like, it's stupid. What I don't have, right, just off my head, you know, I don't think iRacing has it. There used to be a mod for a set of course, and I think other games have it where it comes up on the screen when there's a car near you, and like your car in the middle, and there's like a little radar. Why don't they have like augmented reality on the driver's visors, and they can have like kind of have that so they can see where the car is in relation to them, have a little radar kind of. I don't know.
I would need lasers pointing out the side of the wing mirrors or something like that, and you can judge where you are next to the car based on their laser shining across your cockpit or something.
So when the laser's broken, the wing mirror goes red, so then you can't move over. When it's green, you can move over.
Exactly. There you go. Now we're really onto something.
Oh man, that descended. But this is the thing though, like when you start trying to make separate rules of engagement, this is what it descends to, is kind of this ridiculousness rather than be grown ups and race properly. Like, simple as.
Yeah, you get into the situation where you're making rules to fix other rules when obviously the solution is to remove the initial rule in the first place. So, yeah.
That's you know, when you open the F1 rule book, that's the first line. We've made rules to fix other rules. And as Dave said, like, there's all these added rules, this added code of conduct, all this, and yet F1 is still one of the worst levels of racing in all of the motorsport ladder. There's so much goes on that just wouldn't happen in other, wouldn't be accepted in other series.
Yeah, I think it will come to a head at some point. There'll be another incident, it all kick off again. I'd say these two races have been fairly tame for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, the next controversy is surely only around the corner.
Although I must actually say, like, when Max went into turn one, I was like, there's a bit of an intake of breath. And I think Piastri allowed it, but I was really impressed kind of with how clean it actually was. And to be honest, the speed Max went around Piastri was just impressive in it on its own anyway.
Yeah. But, talking about Imola here.
Sorry, yeah.
I was watching it with Scott, actually, at Brands Hatch. And he was shocked when I said, that's a fantastic move from Max. But it was completely opportune. I think in a bizarre way, Max's really poor start meant he could do that move.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think Oscar's focus was taken by George.
That's what it looked like. It looked like Oscar had slowed to hold George up, and then because the overspeed Max had wasn't natural in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think you're right there.
Somebody asked Oscar after the race what he'd do differently at turn one, and he said, I'd break 10 metres later. And apparently they looked at the data afterwards and he did break 10 metres earlier than he did on any other lap. So, yeah, I think, yeah, his focus was took. But like I say, Max was clean. If they were the other way around, I think Max might have given Oscar a bit of a shove off track at that point and then dealt with the consequences. But that's the difference in racing approach, I guess. So
that's it, yeah. And I mean, we could go in circles with this, but like in all races, the aim as a spectator is to watch a battle, whether that's a first, third, 23rd, doesn't really matter. You want to watch a battle. Brilliant.
Yeah.
But in F1, it's always like you're just waiting for one car to go off. Like,
yeah.
Essentially, like, you know, gone are the days of laps of side by side. I mean, the cars don't allow it kind of as much as they used to anyway, but the racing etiquette itself doesn't really exist anymore to allow that kind of extended battles as such. It's kind of comes to a head very quickly, and usually one car's in a wall upside down on someone's head, kind of something like that.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think there's really much else to talk to for Miami. It wasn't the greatest race, wasn't the worst race. It was watchable, I'd say.
Yeah, it wasn't Suzuka.
No. But I think the big news from Miami came after the race when Alpine confirmed that they dropped Doohan in putting Colapinto for, they said 5 races at the time, but Flavio since says he doesn't know where the 5 races come from, and the 5 races came from Flavio's mouth himself. Yeah. What do you think of that change, Matt?
I love that Flavio just hasn't changed, like, at all. Like, he's still in 1996, isn't he? But probably living in Bristol. There isn't anything. It's something that's been similar with football. When you look at the numbers, like Doohan's been terrible and kind of rightly should be binned off in a way, because there's a number of crashes, kind of incidents have followed him around. And there's not really been any race kind of where you've gone, well, this is it. Doohan's kind of got it now. But then Gasly isn't raking in the points either. Like, it seems to be a pretty poor car overall. So when Doohan isn't trying to do corners with DRS open and having accidents, it doesn't seem like the car's there for him to kind of be super fast with anyway. But I know he has shown pace kind of, he's kind of impressed in bits and patches, it kind of through practice sessions and things like that. He's shown pace in qualifying a few parts. So it's hard on paper to say he's earned a position to stay on. But then when you look at it kind of relative, it's like, well, what better could he have done as well? I did feel sorry for him that he was tired of this brush of having another accident at Miami when Liam Lawson just turned into like he wasn't there. That wasn't his fault at all. Apart from the only thing he could have been different was being further up the grid through qualifying, but that's what it is.
But he actually out-qualified Gasly as well anyway.
Yeah. So, you know what I mean? He did show kind of bits of potential, but this again, another thing that's bugged me this year is this word of rookie and this term of rookie. For number one, Liam Lawson isn't a rookie. He's not a seasoned veteran, but he's not a rookie. I remember GP3, you had difficulty levels, you had rookie and then amateur. That's where Lawson is, I think. You know, and I think Kim is a bit of a special kind of talent in his own, kind of another one of them that's come through. I think Doohan's been fine on a level with the other rookies, but people seem to want to take this excuse away from him and say, well, he's had simulated time, he raced it the last race last year, he's had kind of practice time, but it's still a big jump. And I'm like, with the Colapinto kind of side of it is Briatore kind of threw money at him to get him out of Williams, and like the rumour started straight away, as they will. And it's like hailed as if Colapinto is this kind of the next Argentinian superstar driver.
Fangio, maybe.
I was thinking Fangio, but I thought there must be someone more recent than that. But but then I'm like, well, if Colapinto is this good, then he wouldn't be at Williams and then getting poached by Alpine. Like, surely, like, at some point earlier, he'd have gone higher up the grid. And this is actually kind of something else has put me up. And this is like a big kind of venting session. Colapinto started amazingly last year. Came into Williams after Sargeant and looked brilliant. Most people would look brilliant following Sargeant, yep, but
very low bar.
But then he got crashy. Brazil was spectacular. That was a very difficult condition, so you can kind of forgive him for that. And then people gave him the benefit of the doubt of, oh, he's come in, he's a rookie, he's a new driver, he's finding his feet, he showed some pace, but he's had a few accidents. But then on the other hand, Doohan isn't allowed this rookie kind of forgiveness, and then he's kind of been pulled for it. So, yeah, the double standards have been very strange. And this isn't just from Alpine, this is from different parts of F1 media that I've kind of taken in. And I don't understand it kind of properly, but then Imola and Colapinto is kind of, well, he crashes in qualifying, didn't he?
Yeah, he crashed in qualifying, yeah. Q2. Yeah.
Yeah, and then kind of didn't really kind of set anything in the race. So, yeah, again, it's his first race in the car. You can give him some time, but yeah, like, it's not the upgrade that kind of this magical bullet that Colapinto was meant to be.
No, exactly. And I think all the sticks people were using to beat Doohan with, they were giving Colapinto the benefit of the doubt for, like you say. It's just, like I said, Doohan, he wasn't doing amazingly, but he wasn't doing terribly either. He was having what I'd consider a normal rookie season.
Yeah.
Flashes of speed, throwing it off every now and then, a few silly manoeuvres, getting caught in other people's accidents. But yeah, that's the life of a rookie in, you know, 2025, where you don't have thousands of miles and hours of testing. It's all simulator work or previous cars and all that. And the grid's closer than it's ever been. So, you know, you don't have those stretches where you're just on your own. You can focus on learning to drive the car, learning how it works. You're battling with somebody pretty much all the time. It felt like like you say, since they signed Colapinto, it was just a matter of time of when they could get rid of Doohan. We had all the rumours that he'd be gone after Jeddah. So then to get rid of him after Miami just seemed very strange, because obviously we had a 2 week gap between Jeddah and Miami, and then we've gone straight into Imola after that. It's just very bizarre for me.
I think it's just kind of symptomatic of Alpine as a whole, isn't it?
Yeah, and then to say that it's only a five race deal for Colapinto Pinto as well. I mean, you're just putting the same pressure on that you've got doing, that, you know, you've got to perform in these five races, else you might not have a seat. So is that causing Colapinto to do what he did in qualifying and crash because he's pushing too much, because he's only got five races to prove what he can do, else he's next on the discarded pile?
So I don't see Colapinto in the five race thing, because he seems to be the golden child, and I think he's going to get a lot more leeway than Doohan did. But say he does, then I'd be quite disappointed if Doohan went back in a way. I kind of won't blame him, but at the same time, it'd be quite good for him to put two fingers up to Flav and say, no, you had me. Like, it was horrible. So,
yeah.
Then he'll the third driver in line again. I forget that there is a driver there, isn't there? I forget his name.
Yeah, and I've completely forgot his name as well.
But if you're looking at this and you see the way Doohan's been treated, and then Colapinto comes in and then, for example, gets a five races, and then he's had a couple of crashes and then he's booted out, are you like, I suppose to be an F1 driver, you have to back yourself to be, I'm the driver that's going to come in and make this difference. Yeah. But then, are you really kind of that confident that you can do that? We've spoken about Helmut Marko and kind of Toro Rosso and Red Bull and their treatment, but Flavio's at the next level, isn't he? He's the next level boss, yeah. I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's saying something that, I mean, had Jarre been excellent, and in that, I'm still going to call it Toro Rosso, in that Toro Rosso seat, there's a load of pressure on that. So for him to perform as well as he's done, I mean, a formation lap for the first Grand Prix aside, that's pretty impressive. But then there's no talk about Kimi losing his drive, or Oliver Bearman losing his drive, or Gabriel Bortoleto losing his drive.
Yeah.
And so they've been fine. They've had normal rookie seasons as well. But maybe they've got a little less pressure. So I can't recall them throwing it off or having big accidents or silly mistakes, really. So is the pressure of only having these five race deals what's getting to them? Yeah, I mean, only they can really say.
Yeah, it feels, I mean, Kim is, I think, very well thought of at Mercedes, isn't he? I think a lot of Mercedes is around him, so he's going to be very comfortable. He did obviously have the big spin at Australia, where he's very lucky not to hit anything.
Yeah.
Was it Jeddah away? Was it in qualifying? He hit the wall and then still managed to, like, actually not damage the car and carry on. Yeah. Kind of very luckily. I think I said before, my impression of Antonelli is that he's fast, and at the minute he's kind of just finding that edge, and he's going to have a few incidents, but I think that will iron out of experience. And as long as he's got the backing of the team and support there, that's fine. Again, as a rookie, especially like say in 2025, that you haven't got the testing and the experience, you know. I mean, it still makes me laugh when you look back and Jacques Villeneuve came in as this young driver. He was, what, 24?
Yeah.
These days, you've been in F1 for 5 or 6 years by the time you're that age. So that level of just raw experience is a big part of it. So, and yeah, like even Bortoleto, you'd think would be under pressure back of the grid, but it's Sauber. So it's going to be kind of roughly at the back of the grid. And I think he's actually done fairly well compared to Hülkenberg as well, who's quite a high bar to test. So, yeah, and obviously Bearman, again, is very well thought of. Ferrari's been put into Haas just to kind of gain that experience and do a job, and he's doing that job very well. So, like I say, when you put that pressure on, then the cracks will appear.
Speaking of cracks appearing, obviously, the day after the announcement, Ollie Oakes resigned. And obviously, the rumour at the time was that he was at odds with Flavio over Doohan versus Colapinto. But I think since then it's become a bit clearer that I don't think it really had anything to do with what was going on at Alpine. After his brother was arrested near Silverstone, I believe it was, with what was described as a large amount of cash. His brother runs the high-tech Grand Prix 2 team, or F2 team it is these days, which formerly run, and is owned by Ollie Oakes himself. However, Ollie Oakes came to own it after he was transferred all the shares from Dmitry Mazepin, a close personal friend of Vladimir Putin. So it seems like there may be more to that than meets the eye, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I've not known what to think about this, to be honest, because there isn't technically a direct link, is he, with Hollyoaks and this. It just happens to be his brother and the team that he owns, like, which is quite big.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's I do prefer the narrative of Hollyoaks storming out of Alpine after a big blustering argument with Flavio Briatore. I think that'd be a beautiful image. It's probably a Drive to Survive scene there somewhere.
Oh, but, yeah.
The thing is, like, I was actually really pleased when Hollyoaks came into Alpine, and I think there has been good signs of improvement under him. Whether I'm not quite sure how much yet he was involved in the Mercedes deal, but I think that was a step in the right direction for them, really. Acquiring someone like Doohan was a good idea. It was quite organic and handled a lot better than it was with Piastri, and a lot better than it's been with Colo Pinto and the way Flav's brought him in, to be honest. So it seemed like there was kind of some good moves being made there. You know, he was doing a good job. So it's quite a shame kind of for that to come to an end in the way it has. I kind of just hope he's all right, and like, reach out to him and say, you're all right. You know, when you start talking about issues that involve the Mazepins and, yeah, is he going to fall out of a hospital window or is his doorknob or something? I don't know. But.
Yeah. So it was rumoured that Flav was going to take over as team principal, but he doesn't actually have the necessary licence to do that. Ironically, the licenses to be a team principal were bought in after Flav orchestrated Crashgate. So I believe Emma Dale has taken over for now.
Excuse me?
Emma Dale has taken over from Hollyoaks.
Is this a joke?
That is a very British joke, yes.
All right.
I think Corey Nation Street was next in line as well.
Big fan.
Speaking of team principals, this is something that I couldn't believe. Red Bull at Imola celebrated their 400th race.
All right, okay.
So that was the 400th race for Christian Horner as well. Sauber celebrated their 600th race. Now, the fact that there's only 200 races between those two, it does not compute for me.
Wow, that's mad.
Yeah.
So Sauber were what, 93, 92?
93, yeah.
93, I remember that from the quiz, see?
Yeah, there you go. And I mean, I guess it makes sense because Red Bull were 2004, so there's only actually 11 years between them, and at 15 Grand Prix a year, 15, 16, 17 Grand Prix a year, it makes sense.
But, yeah, it does mean like, Sauber just feel older. Like, kind of.
Don't they just, I guess it's because, you know, we know them from Group C as well, from the mid-80s and all that. So Sauber themselves have been around a lot longer. It just doesn't feel right that there's only 200 races difference between the two.
You forget how early Red Bull actually were as well, because there's a lot of years of almost insignificance kind of building up. Yeah. And then, just the crazy size of the calendar in the past 10, 15 years.
Exactly.
400 races of Christian Horner. How have we survived?
I mean, I actually liked him when he first came in. I'm not going to lie. I thought he was pretty good. He was a breath of fresh air. He'd done well at Arden. He's just, what's the opposite of maturing as you got older? He's just,
molded.
He's not aged like a fine wine. He's aged like a yogurt in the back of the fridge.
But yeah, I remember like Red Bull's press releases used to be hilarious. Like that, it was a breath of fresh air. And I suppose as you start winning championships, that kind of fizzles out, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I think I'm right in saying he's now the longest serving team principal in the sport as well, which is it's just slightly mad.
It's quite funny because I don't remember as such. Team principal to me wasn't a thing before, I don't know, 2005 or something. Like,
it was like team owner.
Frank Williams and Ron Dennis, kind of.
Yeah.
And it's become almost like the football manager position, hasn't it now? Kind of, as soon as a team doesn't win three races, and you start looking at who's in charge and their job's at risk.
Yeah.
And as especially Ferrari proved, then it doesn't work like that.
No.
There's no new manager bounce in F1.
Speaking of Ferrari, they've had a couple of really weird weekends. They were pretty much nowhere in Miami. They were absolutely nowhere in Imola qualifying, but then in the race, they actually looked pretty strong. It's a very odd one. As a lifelong Ferrari fan, I just can't get my head around what's going on at the minute. A lot of talk about Lewis and has he lost it and all that sort of stuff. He's lost a little bit in qualifying, but he was only a 10th behind Charles in Imola, and they were 11th and 12th on the grid. That's a car issue. That's not a Lewis Hamilton driver issue, is it?
I think with Lewis, what's been exacerbated is, in the past, it's not been such an issue with how good Mercedes have been, but when the car's not there, I think sometimes Lewis isn't there, and he'll do his best as he can, and if it's not working, well, we'll go through the motions.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what's not helping Ferrari is, I don't think is it the perception, as Nick likes to talk about, is that Ferrari doing terrible and they're slow and the car's awful. But when the grid is so tight, it's like a couple of tenths and you fall out of the top 10. So it can be a relatively a big margin, I guess. Well, a couple of tenths isn't a huge margin, but just with how tight the grid is. But yeah, they seem to come alive kind of once the initial phase of the race at Imola was out of the way. And yeah, they really came to life. And I couldn't tell where it came from. I couldn't. It did surprise me. I did wonder where it was going because, Miami was such a mess. I think Lewis had the initial advantage, but with all the dicking about of getting them to swap and things like that, that advantage had diminished. So by the time Lewis did get past, well, Lewis had lost his tyre advantage and Charles's were coming back in, so they need to swap again. And I don't read too much into the radio bickering because I imagine if Jean Alesi was stuck behind Gerald Berger at Ferrari, the radio message would probably be very similar. It's just how it is in track. And it's
just, I'm sorry, but those radio messages were some of the greatest comedy things I've ever heard from Lewis. So the first one, what was it? What, do you want to make a cup of tea while you're at it? And then after he was told to let Charles pass, it was like, just so you know, Carlos 1.2 seconds behind you. Oh, you want me to let him pass as well?
Yeah.
That is just like peak millennial British humour, that is.
Yeah. But I don't take that as a sign that Lewis is unhappy and Lewis doesn't want to be at Ferrari or anything like that. That's just kind of race adrenaline, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I think what Ferrari kind of, they ended last year well. I think a lot of time it is just they're very slow at understanding the car and kind of finding the development for it. And by the time they do it, it's too late. So is it following that pattern again this year where 3 or 4 races time, they've probably found something? Obviously, there's a lot of changes coming with this front wing, lack of flexi wing from Spain, isn't there? So is there something from that? Like the way it works now, like I say, it's so tight, they could just find one thing that finds a couple of attempts and all of a sudden they're challenging McLaren.
Yeah, so my understanding is they're having to run the car higher than they originally intended. Obviously disqualified from China for plank wear.
Yeah.
So had to raise it, which means they can't run the car low enough in its intended window. They've got a fix for it, which I believe is due at Silverstone. So if that does work at Silverstone, then I'd go out, put your house on a Lewis Hamilton Ferrari Silverstone win, I think. But like I say, I think that's round 11, 12, 13, something like that. Half a season's gone by that point. It's they're not going to win anything now.
Round 12,
thank you. They'll be looking to pick up a couple of race wins, I think, just so they don't close out of the league completely winless. But I guess it's that, how much are they going to put into understanding the car versus making sure the 26 car is where it needs to be.
I mean, there's a lot of that issue, isn't there, throughout the grid?
Yeah, exactly. Is it, how early do you switch that focus?
So does this ride-out issue, does that explain Lewis's sprint performance in that if the car is obviously running lighter, there's a fuel load of such, then they can kind of run it lower?
Yeah, they're only, if it is too low, it's only scraping off the track for a third at a time. So in theory, maybe it's only going to have a third of the wear that it would in a full race. So yeah, I mean, they're only 0.1 millimetres over, I think it was, and you can have 1 millimetre wear. So yeah, in theory, they can run it lower in sprint races, which again, Lewis was very strong in the sprint race at Miami. That was a wet, dry race. That was about the call to change your tyres. Lewis pretty much nailed that. That's what he's good at. He's strong in those conditions anyway. So, yeah, maybe not so much the being able to run it lower, but, yeah, definitely could have a factor.
I've not actually heard anything from Ferrari as to why they're good in the sprint either. So it's a classic Ferrari that they don't know why they're being good, but
yeah,
it'd be interesting to see if that kind of form continues.
Yeah. So last thing I wanted to touch on, Matt, was this was most likely, I think by all accounts, Imola's last F1 race. How do you feel about that? Personally, I'm not really fussed, but yeah, I'm aware others may have different opinions.
Yeah, so I love Imola. It is one of my favourite tracks. I think it's proper old school. It's narrow, which is obviously actually a fault of it as such, but it's a challenge. But it's so beautiful. It's pretty kind of, one day I'm going to go there and just, I don't know, get a helicopter ride around it or something, just admire everything. But I don't know. I think it's a great place. It's a great circuit. I think this year, I think a lot of people anticipated going in, as I do every year, that there's going to be very little overtaking, and everybody harks back to Schumacher being stuck behind Alonso as a classic example. But I think this year, the DRS zone kind of was a bit overpowered. It seemed quite easy for a lot of people going into turn one. But the biggest shame is the reason it's going, and you've got, so to be honest, I don't think any track anywhere should have a deal until 2040, never mind the tracks that have got them deals.
Yeah.
And I think that's a shame that we're losing, you know. I'm not saying that Imola should stay because it's an old track, and I'm biased because I like it, but to be losing kind of heritage circuits as such for effectively fad street circuits, I think is a shame. I think the calendar needs balance, and tracks like Miami, and I don't want to class Jeddah because there is something quite good about Jeddah. There's something quite bad about Jeddah, but there's something quite good as well. So they have their place. But, you know, where we can end up with a calendar filled up with 25 Miamis and Jeddahs or something like that. I don't know kind of what the aim is. But, yeah, it's not a great loss overall. It's just, it's a sign of the direction that's not so good, I think.
Yeah. I think it's lucky to be on the calendar. Obviously, it came in 2020 when we're scrambling for places to actually hold a race. During COVID, it won itself a 4-year contract off the back of that. Obviously, this season, the last year of that, had a race cancelled due to the devastating floods in the area as well. As I say, it's a great track to actually drive around. It's a brilliant track. It looks fantastic. I love the natural deterrence to going off track there. Mm. We saw you get slightly off track, you're going to pay for it. You're in a gravel trap or a wall or the wrong way on the grass. But like I say, the narrowness just meant it's not ideal for F1 cars of this size. Now, whether that's a track issue or a car issue, that's a completely separate debate. What I will say is, as I mentioned at the start, you know, I was down at Brands Hatch with Scott, Dave, Nick, Phil. We were all down there. And during the Grand Prix started during the lunch break, so I brought it up on my phone. Me and Scott said, oh, we'll watch the first couple of laps. Watch the replay to start and then, you know, turn it off, because at that point the race is probably over in Imola. You can't overtake. We actually ended up sitting watching the entire thing because it was a pretty decent race. Two different strategies seemed to work. Like you say, overtaking was possible. It was DRS overtaking, so it's not quite the same, but it did mean that you didn't just end up with the usual DRS trains we see at this track. So it held my attention completely this time. Sad to see it go. If you told me it was going so that we could have Spa on the calendar every year, I'd be like, okay, yeah, fair deal. If it's going so that we can have, like you say, somewhere like Qatar every year, China every year, it's a bit more, really. But at the same time, 24 races a year, I don't think two races in any European country is something we should be looking at. There's enough European countries, enough tracks in different countries that should be hosting races. I understand the importance of Italy in a historical context, but then you could say by that token France should have a Grand Prix as well. So
yeah, at least one. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's a shame there's no good racing tracks for F1 in France.
I thought you were gonna put that stipulation there.
Yeah, I mean, the best racing track in the world is in France, but yeah, it you know, F1 would just ruin it, so please stay away.
Yeah, I mean, unless I'm at the San Marino argument, but yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, I fully agree with that. Like, the calendar, we can be disgruntled with the calendar as much as we want, but it's there, kind of. So, yeah, it's a good point that you've got, like, say, countries like France without a race. Germany's not even gone, has it?
No, Germany don't have one.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, major nations within motorsport. So, yeah, while you've got countries like without race and you've got two races in one country, then that's definitely obvious imbalance.
Before anyone jumps on me, I'm fine with three races in the US purely because of the size of it and, you know, the different areas of it. And two of the tracks I actually quite like. So it's not Miami.
There is something about Miami that kind of works, but it's ugly. It's
You're
ugly
a Dolphins
to watch.
Fan. I'm not taking your opinion on this matter.
Yeah, the bit around the stadium looks good. But when you've got a chicane under a freeway, like, no.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's quite funny to say, three races in America. Yeah, it doesn't actually use any of the proper American tracks, but yeah. Yeah, so I think that's us caught up on the past couple of weeks that, of F1 that we kind of been through. Obviously, kind of a bit of a lack of episodes lately. Real life kind of just hits us all. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we have real lives. So, yeah. Thank you to anyone that stuck with us through the gap and noticed the new episode in their subscription list, particularly James. So, yeah.
Be like James.
Yeah, be more like James. Yes, everyone. 5-star Spotify, comments away. Let's have some discussion. Yeah, hopefully kind of next episode we should have a few more kind of people back together. We've got quite a few topics in the bank as well. So, yeah, keep listening out and draw some very thrilling conversation will be coming soon.